things we're dealing with are threats to humanity unlike anything the world has ever seen before.
We can bequeath our children a greener planet and a more prosperous future.
That's what climate change is about. It is literally, not figuratively, a clear and present danger.
If unprecedented changes are not made and made soon, there will be irreversible damage to the planet.
Zero carbon.
East Hall.
Hello and welcome to Zero Carbonista Series 5, Just Stop the Tories. This is the UK's number one environment-based podcast. If it's green, it's in. Or Dale, if it's nutty, it's in. Because I think we should start off with this. Who's upset you this week, Dale? What's happened?
Who is this week's right-wing nut? Come on, somebody must know.
I'm told it's Richard Tice.
Yes, I have it now. So it's all kicked off last week, actually. And it started by some fool called Guido Fawkes, who like has got about 10 followers. Well, that's probably more like 100 or something. But, you know, most of them are politicians and journalists. He put something false online, claiming that I was a supporter of Hamas, or I'd called them freedom fighters or something like that. Some old guff anyway. Richard Tice picked it up amongst two or three Tory MPs. Mickey Fabricant, he was one of them.
Mickey the Hair Fabricant.
That's why he looks like he's been or is in the process of being taken over or eaten alive by a mop.
Yeah, he looks like he's just failed an audition for The Muppet Show.
All that. And so Tice comes along and repeats the same thing. And the reason we got him in there this week is because actually what he was repeating was a Tory distraction story. So to distract from the sexist, racist, violent language of their biggest donor, and it was a huge scandal, they came up with this other scandal that says, oh, but that Labour donor bloke, he supports Hamas. And Richard Tice, who allegedly wants to take over the Tory party, doesn't like them, wants to beat them at the ballot box and all that kind of stuff, he's repeating it. And I'm like saying this to him, what are you doing? You're doing the Tories' job for them. I thought we had at least one thing in common, which is we don't like the Tories.
Well, and it's interesting because you've had previous with Richard in a good way because you've had nice debates in the past.
Yeah, and listen, I didn't take it personal. He wasn't a bad bloke to chat to before, a bit like Nigel Farage, really. It's a strange thing. And lawyers' letters are on the way to him and Mickey Fabricant as we speak.
Mickey the Hair Fabricant. Yeah. I wonder what you'll get from him.
Well, what I want them to do is actually correct their accounts, take it down, you know, put up an apology, that kind of stuff, because it's misleading.
Is it still up there?
I haven't looked, actually. You know, I haven't looked. I've been too busy getting on with, you know, more fun things than looking at.
So they were quoting something they allege you said on a radio show.
Yeah, so Guido Fawkes started off. It was from the Labour conference last summer, but it's a fake headline. It's one of those things, you know, like the Daily Mail, I have them in court for writing a fake headline and then correcting it in the article. Guido Fawkes did the same thing, fake headline, more true story in the article. They just retweeted it and were like, oh, look at that bloke, he supports Hamas, you know, which is a pretty damaging thing to say in the current environment.
It's also bollocks as well.
It's completely untrue. And so I'm just not going to let it be because false headlines mislead people.
And even when there's a clarification, you know, two people see the clarification.
Exactly.
10 million saw the false headline.
Exactly. I mean, who reads it? The Sunday Telegraph did it recently. They put in their headline that I'd had £15 million from the government. I'd already told them it wasn't. It was a government-backed loan. They made the correction eventually. But as you say, who's going to see that, right?
Yeah.
Nobody reads the article twice anyway, do they?
Well, they try not to.
Yeah. But in our case against the Daily Mail, the other thing that we're throwing into the evidence bin, and it's quite big, is that these outlets have their own paywall, which prevent you from reading anything except the headline, unless you're a subscriber. So they're kind of enforcing on people this habit we all have anyway.
It's a really good point. So you don't even get that. They can't even say, well, you know, but the context was in the article, which is no defense anyway. But you know, if there was one, that might be the one, but no longer can they do that because they've got the paywall going.
Yes, but currently that is a defense, by the way. Up until now, that's how it's been interpreted in law. And this is the novel aspect of the case we're bringing against the Daily Mail. We've done research that shows people's habits are, as you and I may guess, simply to read headlines and think, well, I know what's going on in that story. Now I'm going to move on to the next one.
If that wasn't an explosive beginning to a podcast, then this might be because and I'm saying this blindfold, really, because Dell's about to introduce a new feature. I don't know anything about it.
I'm kind of wishing I was blindfolded now.
Have I talked it up a bit too much?
No, not at all. I'm kind of wishing I was mouthfolded because I might be about to, like, you know, just start a controversy. I don't really know. But I was thinking maybe every now and then we need a left-wing nut.
That's good.
And I've got one. I've got one for this week's episode.
Go on.
Owen Jones, bless him.
Owen, the boy Jones. Yeah. He's walked the plank, hasn't he?
He's walked the plank. He built it first. Yeah. I mean, it's his own plank, I think. Then this is the whole point for me of putting him up in this week's left wing nut new thing. He's like the inaugural target member.
He came from the mountaintops and built what was, you know, meant to be a kind of credible, slightly younger force for the Labour Party. And now he's, to coin that political phrase, as my old nan would say, he's off
in a sulk, right? And he's like so disappointed by Labour. They haven't done this, they haven't done that, and all this kind of stuff. And look, I understand that lots of people want to hear stronger language from Labour, more commitments, that kind of stuff. And I understand where Labour are coming from too. But I also understand this one big thing. Only Labour can replace the Conservatives. So it makes no sense to walk off in a strop because you're not hearing what you want to hear from Labour in the teeth of the most important election of our lifetimes when we finally get the chance not to have a Tory government.
And they always do the same, whatever side of the spectrum they're on, they always say, right, I'm going to start another party. Oh, good luck with that, mate. Good luck with that. That's really going to work, isn't it? You're just going to sort of divide the very core of what you ultimately still believe.
Yes, which is what, of course, Richard Tice has done. We said on previous episodes, I was even considering being a donor.
I thought you were going to say a donut for a second.
Well, I've done that before.
Yeah, I mean, such is your passion for the project and the title of this podcast that it was almost worth throwing a few quid to another party that might get the Tories out.
That's right. And I was sharing the idea with a good friend, and he said to me, well, what I'm going to say to you is to quote Napoleon, when your enemies are busy falling out with each other, just like, you know, it's polite to let them get on with it. This is the reform and the Tories. And I was thinking more like Sun Tzu, right? On the battlefield, your enemy's enemy is your friend. That's what I was thinking. So chuck him a few quid.
Your enemy's enemy is your friend, yeah.
But I decided not to.
But not always, as it's turned out.
But yeah, he's also my enemy as well at times. But
for a bit, Let's move to this story, Dale. England won't adopt EU river pollution rules for pharma and cosmetic firms. And this is, again, I know it's a line we always repeat on this podcast. It's, you read it and you scratch your head and go, no, I've read that wrong, surely. Mm. But apparently not.
For me, this is just one of them stories we file in that category of what didn't Brexit do for us, right? The Tories promised we could actually not just match EU regulations in the future, we could improve upon them. Actually, we would be better than the EU for environment regulations. I mean, it sounded like bullshit at the time. And story after story, like the banning of that bee-killing chemical we talked about the other week, you know, story after story shows us actually we're going down below the level of environment protections that are in the EU. Just another one of those things that Brexit didn't do for us.
And just to tie that in with a Gina Miller story, Gina Miller, of course, for those not familiar, was an anti-Brexit campaigner, has calling for ecocide to be criminalised as she warns the UK is far behind the EU on this. And this could involve major polluters going to jail.
This ecocide thing's been around for a while, and I think it originated here in Stroud, along with the Extinction Rebellion and Just Stop Oil and all them other good things, and Ecotricity, of course. And it's a great idea, and I think the EU are close to embedding it in law. And this is, the concept is if you're doing harm to the environment, that's actually illegal. It seems like a really simple, obvious kind of common sense thing, doesn't it?
Well, you might. I think if you took a clipboard around the UK, I think most people would probably imagine that was already an offence.
You could be right.
But apparently not. It just like remained untouched forever.
Yes, it's just been that way forever. You're right. One last thing on Brexit. I was reading this week that I think it was from a speech by Rachel Reeves. Labour are adopting the statistic from the Office of Budgetary Responsibility, the Parliament Financial Watchdog, Economic Watchdog, who say that the UK's economy has shrunk 4% GDP-wise because of Brexit.
Wow.
It's unarguable. Apparently, it's in the numbers. Our economy got smaller. Our immigration doubled. Our environment policies have got worse.
Other than that?
Brexit. Brexit, what was it good for? Other than that, it's a lovely idea, you know, blue passports, who doesn't want that?
Working a treat. Yeah, think of your new passport. That's the thing, isn't it? Will says, does the UK's political funding system need to reform? I'm sorry, he's used the word reform there.
With a small r, though, it's okay.
With a small r, yeah.
Yeah, I think it does. I did an interview last week about this on BBC, some kind of podcast or news show for the BBC. I was just thinking off the top of my head, we were talking about donations. Obviously, the Tories' dodgy donor, you know, the one I mentioned earlier, was making the news headlines. And I was saying, well, why don't we just fund it centrally, you know, from public money? Because actually, we probably only need £50 million to fund a whole election without any kind of donors at all. And it only comes around once every 5 years. So that's like 10 million quid a year. That's really cheap, I reckon, to have a clean election. And when you look at things like the decisions government make, you can see how important or how unimportant 10 million quid is. Liz Truss cost us 30 billion in 1 month. So 10 million every year, I mean, is peanuts, right?
Yeah. I mean, you might think so, but you're talking logic here.
Yeah, that's right. But then, you know, we'd end all of this, the shadowy donations that the Tories get from like shell companies that are set up in Britain just for that, you know, that kind of stuff. We'd end the kind of allegations that go backwards and forwards across the spectrum, you know, oh, this fella's buying policy and blah, blah, blah. And I know we'd end all of that because how about this? Nobody's allowed to put money into political parties. It all comes from central funding. That'd be super.
There it is. Let's go back to Labour. Starmer announcing plans for Great British Energy, a company during, he mentioned this during a visit to Wales. I mean, he's talked a lot about this 8.3 billion quid plan to build floating offshore wind farms, first investment that the company Great British Energy is going to create tens of thousands of skilled jobs across, this is just Wales as well. I'm assuming you are in support of this, Dale.
I was wondering what was new in here because we've heard about Great British Energy now for probably about a year and a half, I think, since two conferences ago. And the idea of putting public money in, having publicly owned renewable assets, I think is, you know, it's a great idea. I've been arguing for it for a long time. And I'm not sure what was new in here, unless it was a commitment to build floating offshore wind farms. I don't really know. There's nothing here not to like.
I mean, is that a no-brainer, floating offshore wind farms? Is there any controversy surrounding them?
Personally, I think it's a bonkers idea, but you know, there's enough people in that industry and presumably in politics that want to see it happen. It's like offshore wind farms. You know, there is a lot of room out there. You can build enormous projects, but we have enough land onshore. We need 1% of the land of Britain to make all the electricity we need from onshore windmills. They're much cheaper. They last longer because they live in a less harsh environment. It just makes perfect sense to me. But hey-ho.
Here's a story out of Africa, which would disturb anybody. This is a study that's found that human-caused climate change made dangerous humid heat in West Africa 10 times more likely, temperatures exceeding 40 Celsius. This is West Africa, mid-February.
Hmm. I saw that linked to cocoa prices soaring ahead of Easter. You know, you've got to have a consumer spin on these stories, right?
Right.
The climate crisis is threatening Easter eggs. Come on. Now we'll do something about it.
First, they take our windmills. Then they take our Easter eggs or something like that.
Something like that.
Nobody wants to see this.
Obviously, it's not funny, but
no, no. But you know, gallows humor and all the rest of it. Extraordinary times when you look at a devastating stat like that. I mean, that's 10 times hotter.
And one stat after another, isn't it?
Here's a question from James who says, have you had any other football clubs copy the green initiatives of Forest Green Rovers?
Well, I'd say not completely, but lots of clubs have done bits of what we've done. There have been a few football clubs that have copied our shirt designs, like Man City, for example. Man United have borrowed one. Arsenal this year, they're playing in one that's so remarkably like one of ours from two seasons ago. So that's quite nice, right? They're following our style, at least, even if theirs aren't made of coffee grounds and good things like that.
Are they selling vegan pies, though?
Some of them do, actually. They actually do, which is good.
Former CPS chief says clamp down on protests risks creating thought crimes. Now, I suppose this does intrinsically link with a lot of climate protests because many of the protests we've seen in recent times are climate related.
It was such a weird thing to say. I read it just a minute ago and I thought, what is he saying? I mean, the headline says one thing. Then you read what he says. He says, there are things that people think and things that people say and sometimes things that people do, which are offensive, blah, 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 but which we shouldn't regard as crossing the line into criminal conduct. It sounds to me like he's suggesting there are things that people think that could or couldn't cross the line into criminal conduct. I don't know why he's throwing up this issue of thought crimes unless it's on his mind or the police's mind generally.
Maybe he's just a nut job.
He's in his dotage, probably. That's what it is. And he's like, well, you just think yourselves lucky we don't do you for what you think about.
That's right. I mean, can you imagine? You lucky people, you can think about anything you like under our
That's what he's saying, free speech. The moment. That's what he says. You're right, because he says at the end, I'm saying no more than we should remember what free speech means. That's so sinister.
Here's a question from Pippa, who says, what challenges would Labour face in changing public services back into public ownership? Is this feasible from a cost perspective? Now, of course, at one point, the Labour Party, or Starmer, did talk about renationalisation, but I think he's rowed back a bit on that as he's kind of been forced to look at the books and make some sort of tough priorities as to what comes first. But the challenges, I would imagine, are pretty darn big, even if you want that to happen.
Well, I think two things. One is, even if we had all the money in the world, it wouldn't be a very sensible investment to buy back at an inflated price something that we sold already on the very cheap and something that's been run down and is currently a basket case. Say, for example, the water industry, the energy industry, actually all of them, right? Trains, that, you know, they would cost far more now than we sold them for decades ago, and they're in a far worse state. I'm not sure that makes any sense, but I think what does make sense is simply to control them better, properly, make them operate in the public service, you know, with a regulator with proper teeth. Don't allow them to siphon money out of our economy for dividends when everything over here is crumbling and shite.
There's a slogan. There's an advertising campaign. Speaking of advertising campaigns, there's a new in Sheffield. Sheffield Council has implemented a new advertising and sponsorship policy to stop harmful advertising that contributes to the climate crisis. So the policy prohibits ads for polluting products and brands like airlines, airports, cars, fossil fuel companies on council-owned billboards. They're having none of it.
I love it. And it's what we've done at Forest Green Rovers. If you look at what they're banning, it's things like the promotion of gambling, you know, vaping, unhealthy food, that kind of stuff, as well as airlines, airports, you know, and them other things. So I think it's a brilliantly progressive thing, because we know that advertising works, which is why people spend money on advertising, and it can work in a good or bad way, depending on what you're trying to sell, right?
Indeed. Final question from Simon. General question. I think a lot of people would be interested in this, if you know the answer, Dale. Do solar panels have to go on roofs? Simon says, I've sometimes seen them in gardens and even used vertically as like a replacement fence.
I've seen them on the side of buildings. And I was, just before I came to do this, recording bits of my book for the audio book update thing. And the guy there started talking to me about exactly the same thing. He reckons he's seen vertical solar farms. So out in a field, solar panels that just go straight up on a mast or something and are double-sided. I never heard or seen of that, but it sounds very interesting.
I remember, so when I was a kid going to school in the kind of late 70s, early 80s, there was a family around the corner who had solar panels on their roof. No one, I don't think anybody had solar panels anywhere. I mean, certainly, and we didn't even know what they were to begin with. So they've been around a long time, but I wonder whether the aesthetics of solar panels has been almost the enemy of solar panels becoming a bigger thing. If you thought that you could just stick something in your backyard, I wonder whether that would enamor more people to go for them.
Well, you definitely can do that, because they work on the ground just as well as they work on a roof. And the stuff that we, Ecotricity, are building, they're all out there on the ground, you know, the big solar farms we're building. So that's all fine. The 80s, wow. I'm not sure solar energy had been invented long before that, actually.
You know, I think they might have just had the panels there. Probably weren't connected to anything.
You know, it was invented by NASA, right, back in the day?
Is that right? What makes sense?
In order to have power in satellites and stuff that orbits, you know, orbits the Earth, because you can't take batteries up there with you. Not really.
Pretty obvious stuff, isn't it, when you think about it?
I just want to say thank you, NASA.
Thank you, NASA. And Star Trek as well.
Definitely thank you, Star Trek.
We'll speak in a week, Dale.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Liam.
Don't forget, of course, you can follow this podcast from your podcast provider. That way you get each episode automatically. And of course, really important bit, follow Dale on social media, which is twitter.com/DaleVince, facebook.com/DaleVince, and on TikTok too.
Zero Carbon. East off.